Good afternoon, welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans for the week of May 21st, 2018. As always, I am your host, Robert Vajos, joined this week by the typhoon to my earthquake, Rick Monsey. Rick, how's it going?
Going good. Excited to talk about an interesting and lopsided main event we had going on.
Yeah, interesting and lopsided main event are two things that don't really go together. It kind of feels like an oxymoron you got there, Rick.
Yeah. We'll explain further. The wet blanket's coming out yet again.
Justified, I would say, this week. Justified. We'll get to that in a minute, though. But I do want to let you know about the ways to come in contact with the show. Get to us on email. Very long-form way to get to us. Send us questions. Send us questions for us to research. And who knows, it may even spring up a segment of its own like it did a couple of weeks ago. That email address is mmalivecast@gmail.com. That is mmalivecast@gmail.com. And you can get to us on two different Twitter accounts, the show proper Twitter account, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, at MMA Livecast, that's at mmalivecast, and the mothership at MMA Torch, that's at mmatorch. Okay, Rick, let's talk about that lopsided but interesting main event. Last night, we're recording this on Sunday morning, we had Kamaru Usman taking out Damian Maia by unanimous decision. 50-45, 49-46, and another 49-46. Was this fight as boring as all the punditry has made it out to be in the wake of the fight?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it deserves every piece of negative reception it's getting. And I don't really have a lot to say about Usman's performance. He's got only one finish in his last eight wins in the UFC. Going to decision is what he does. And I don't blame Usman for the boring fight for the most part. This is the third snoozer in a row for Damian Maia, in my opinion. Maia had an abysmal performance. And at 40 years old, it was just boring and plodding to see him lie on his back pleading with Usman to jump on his into his guard.
Yeah, he's at a weird state in his career as far as the entertainment factor goes in that his opponents respect his jiu-jitsu so much still that they're not going to engage with him in that area. But yet, Maia himself is so limited in every other area that he's not going to engage with his opponents anywhere there. And like you said, given his age, he can't force the issue, it seems, at this point. So this is kind of what you're going to get in these Damian Maia fights, which have been going on for a while. I think the last real highlight he had was when he choked out Carlos Condit very quickly. But since then, it's been, you know, the fight against Masvidal where, you know, the backpack, as Tyron Woodley was calling him in that fight. And then the Woodley fight, which was very bad. And the Covington fight where he didn't look so good. And then now we have this fight against Usman. Usman is a guy that's pretty entertaining whenever he speaks. And he has a fun personality. One of these welterweights that's on the come up. Do you see him as getting a shot at the top of the division? He seems, after last night, to be saying he absolutely wants one. Doesn't want to take a guy like a Masvidal who's coming off a loss. He wants a top level guy in the division. Does he deserve it at this point?
No, I think he gets Masvidal.
Yeah, and that's not a bad fight, actually. Like, that'll be a pretty entertaining fight on an undercard of a fight night or a pay-per-view. Welterweight is still pretty stacked, and there's some stuff to sort out here in a couple of weeks. So there's not really a rush. I don't think you got to put Usman at the top of the division anytime soon. Let's talk about the other side of this, though. You mentioned Maia. Are we done with Maia? Is Maya's career just completely flatlined, or is this just a string of three unfortunate losses?
Oh, I think it's flatlined. I think the Maia puzzle has been clearly figured out, especially by wrestlers. I think we need to keep him away from five-round main events from now on. This was it. This is his last chance, and that's the only one you're going to get. This was a very entertaining card for the most part, but having Maia on the featured fight weighed the entire card down, in my opinion. And I heard that he said, I still have three fights under my contract, and he wants to fight out those three fights, and that's just unfortunate. And hopefully the UFC and him can come to agreement. Maybe they give him one more fight. No, I don't even want to see him, when I say featured, I don't even want to see him in a co-main. Like, I want him to be the third from the top, or, you know, even farther down. If you have a pay-per-view that you're going to be featuring and you want to pump it up, the last thing you want to do at this point is have Damian Maia be the main fight on the FS1 prelim cards to attract people to buy the thing. Like, I don't know where you put him, and I definitely don't want to see him fight three more times.
I still think a win over him is a good resume builder for whoever gets it, because I think he has enough of a reputation. But yeah, in a featured sense, no. And partially because it's his boringness is his fighting, if this makes sense. Like, a lot of people say that Demetrius Johnson is boring, but I think it's more the personality of Demetrius Johnson that they don't like. His fights actually aren't that boring. On the other hand, someone like Maya, his fights are just flat out boring. People aren't attracted to that type of thing, and so I think he can still be useful in that utility role. And if you were to see him early on a card, you would think, wow, this must be a very deep card. But at the top of the card, as we've seen to this point, everything kind of weakens with his presence. I want to take a quick sidebar and talk about him stylistically. He's definitely considered one of the top Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys in the sport, or at least was very recently. Is his recent sort of the malaise that his fights have caused, is it an indictment on the discipline or an indictment on being just good at one thing?
I think that in the post-fight show they had, they broke it down pretty good, where they were saying that it was more of him not being mentally prepared for at least this fight, where when he was pulling guard, he was pulling guard when he didn't have any access to Usman's body. Like, when he started in the position where he was charging at Usman, he should have pulled guard right away, but by the time Usman had his head already and Usman's arm and everything, then he's pulling guard, and there's no reason for Usman to just fall into that position. Damian Maia needed to take advantage of split-second opportunities he had, especially in the first round when he had Usman in that sort of, like, that crank, that vice, and he just didn't do it. And it led to a very boring fight in which I fell asleep on two separate occasions and I had to be woken up by my girlfriend, and it was just bad. And I don't want to see that anymore. And I think that I think, like, the discipline is successful if you mix it, especially against wrestlers. It can be successful if you add different elements to it. He needs different ways to get the takedown. And I think that if you were just doing jiu-jitsu alone, obviously that's not enough, but it's also not enough to throw 1-2 combinations as the only alternate and throw no leg kicks. The one thing that they pointed out in the post fight was that it was a really good point. He should have been throwing leg kicks that entire fight. Why do you not throw leg kicks against a wrestler like Usman? Because you don't want to get taken down. What did he want to do all the whole fight? Get taken down, or at least be on his back. So he should have been throwing leg kicks. He should have been throwing high kicks. He should have been doing everything he could, as long as he didn't get knocked out, to get Usman where he wanted, and he just didn't do it. It's fighting IQ, in my opinion.
Yeah, and maybe a little bit of hubris in just believing in what you can do versus what needs to be done. Overall, what do you think about the crowd last night in Chile?
I thought they were excited for the most part. They did do this one thing, and I'm starting to get critical of crowds, and I don't quite mean to do it, but did you notice the whistling thing they were doing when they were bored? That was driving me insane. Like, I know that's to entice the ref to break up when they had people in the clinch and whatnot. Like, they would start this high-pitched whistling sound. It would sound like birds to break it up, and that was to show their disappointment. And on TV, that was just really annoying to hear. Like, I know that's kind of the point, to get the fighters to move and the ref to do something. But as a person just watching in my own house, I was like, I turned the TV down. I was like, oh, I can't stand that.
Oh, man, Rick, you're borderlining on Luke Thomas Woo Zone over here if you're stuck going into whistles. Now, the crowd was at least enthusiastic, I thought, throughout the night. They had energy for sure. They weren't one of these fight night cards that is just totally bored out of their mind by the time the main event comes around. These guys had energy to them, so I'll give them credit for that. I did notice on the broadcast, and this might be a super random thing, did it seem like they just had like one different crowd shot? Only one crowd shot that they were going through for the entire night? It was like the same four dudes kept getting on camera the entire time.
Yeah, that older gentleman with white hair who's like three rows back and two seats in. I saw him like seven times on the broadcast. That was hilarious.
Yeah, like, is he like an important guy in the local government that they had to like cut a deal that they make it on TV like 45 times? Every time they would cut away, it was the same thing. I really am, in general, just so sour on this format for the FS1 cards. It's the two fights an hour, it's the recaps, it's the hype packages, there's just no energy to these shows. And we've talked about it a thousand times, and it sort of dovetails into the 3-hour Raw conversation and all the tentacles that has. But it really is, there's just no energy on those FS1 shows, regardless of the quality of fights. The quality of fights seems to not affect one way or the other whether or not those shows drag or not. It's one of those things where if you can watch these shows on DVR, it's such a better experience being able to fast forward through all the fluff. I wonder, and we're going to talk about some TV stuff later, but I wonder with the new broadcast partners and the new UFC that comes to us after the TV deal, if they're going to clean some of that up or at least make it more interesting between bouts, because it is just – it's not fun at all in any way right now.
Well, I know that – speaking of that, I used to get excited when they first started working with Fox about hearing Fox Sports that – the intro music they had, and like they played the same. It's like a trumpet, the nut, 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 like after the commercial break and before the commercial breaks. Yeah. Now that's just like, that's the signal for me to start to doze. Like it's the opposite effect now. It's got that Impact Wrestling heat on me when I hear that music. And it'll be cool just if they go on like when they do ESPN Plus, like you're saying, just to hear different intro music or something, just for love of everything holy, just change it up.
Yeah, and that music, because I think it's a slight takeoff of the Fox's NFL music that they use. And so I always thought it was kind of cool because it was like the mainstreaming of UFC. Like, oh, yeah, they have, like, this is, like, the same channel that the NFL is on, and they're doing that. But, yeah, it sort of become this Pavlovian thing where you're just conditioned to do other things when you hear that. I mean, when you hear what – it will send it to Karen Bryant at the desk, and this has nothing to do with Bryant's ability, but it's just like, oh, great. We're doing this again. That's enough ranting about the broadcast, though. What do you think of the co-main event with the quick submission from Tatiana Suarez over the once very hyped Alexa Grasso? She got the rear naked choke at 244 of the first round. What do you think of her performance there?
I know Tatiana Suarez looked great in getting that rear naked choke, and future is looking up for her, and it has been for a while. So it'd be nice if the UFC got behind her and, you know, promoted her like a undefeated fighter that she is. But on the other hand, her opponent, Alexa Grasso, is another one of those UFC's heavily marketed young prospects who are potentially flaming out. If you compare where she was out in 2016 to where her stock is now, it's dropped significantly. But the good news for Grasso is that she's young and there's still time. And the worst thing that could happen to her, she loses another two fights, and she could just change divisions. You know, the UFC clearly likes her and wants her to stay around. She just needs to develop her skills a little bit better or stop going against the Tatiana Suarez's of the world until she figures stuff out.
Yeah, I was thinking last night that during the fight, it was the case of the fighter that the UFC is looking to push and then the fighter that the UFC has no reason not to push but just kind of hasn't thus far. In Suarez, and then maybe last night was the turning point for her. Yeah, I mean, she's only Suarez is only 27 years old, which is, you know, 3 years older than Alexa Grasso, but still very, very young in the MMA game. And I do think there's a future there. And it's funny with both these women, they're strawweights, but they didn't look tiny out there. Was that just me, or was that like, did they look like very big strawweights?
Well, they look big, and they did something. I don't know if this is on purpose. This is a little bit of a sidebar. But the female ref that they had there, Camila Albuquerque, she was kind of smaller herself. So these two women, in comparison to her, they look big. You know, if they would have had big Dan Mergulata or something out there, these ladies would have kind of looked small, these fighters. But compared to Camila, who is the third person in the, you know, the octagon, they look pretty tall. And I also just want to ask, do you think it was on purpose that every female fight that night had the same female ref in it?
I don't know. I mean, she's been on before. I've seen her before, and she has ref men before, I'm fairly certain of.
Yeah, not that night, though. It was kind of weird. It was like Chili's like, okay, we got their athletic state board or whatever. They're like, okay, we got female fighters, right? Well, we should have a female ref. And it was like every time, after the second time, I was like, oh, I bet you they're going to have Albuquerque back out there to ref this one, the co-main. Oh, and then she was there. And I thought she did a good job for most part, except in the KGB fight. I have some opinions about that. But yeah, I think that from now on, we should just book the refs compared to the people's heights. So we need all different kinds of refs.
Yeah, I've been championing that on this show for a long time, and I certainly didn't start it. It's something that's and it comes from pro wrestling, is actually where you get that concept of you know, like the stories of Macho Man Randy Savage not wanting Nick Patrick to referee his matches because he looked short next to Nick Patrick. So that's definitely something. Yeah, Camila Albuquerque, for personal reasons, that's my favorite ref, just for name reasons. It's almost like, yeah, there's a member of the Detroit Tigers a few years ago called Al Albuquerque, which is peak. That's the peak of any name, is Al Albuquerque. That's like something I would, you know, a cliche name that you would name someone. But yeah, I've seen her before, and I do wonder, it could be a athletic commission decision and not necessarily a rule, like you have to do this, but like something that maybe they would feel would make sense. I think the way fighters are conditioned to respond to a referee in general, and you see how it is a very automatic response the way fighters do, I don't think gender really plays an issue. Mm-hmm. It's something like when it was going to be a thing in the NFL about 5 years ago, where there was going to be the first female referee, it became this big old thing, and would players listen and all that. And I think people don't understand that people are just conditioned. The referees have such control in a sporting event, even if they do lose that control at times. But there's a conditioning of the fighters. I don't think the fighter, the last thing on the fighter's mind is the gender of the referee. What did you think about the really uninspiring call out from Dominic Reyes at the end of his TKO over Jared Cannonier?
Yeah, I think that he needs a get better at that, because he is impressive. I mean, he dropped Cannonier with a beautiful left uppercut. I mean, Cannonier fell like a 205-pound box of rocks, and he was quickly up, but the ref seen enough. And that TKO was like a boxing-style knockout, the left uppercut, and I thought that was really cool. And I think they can put some stuff behind him, but maybe he should just go to promo school.
Whenever you call out somebody that I have to look at their Sherdog page or their Wikipedia page to see, like, who is that that they're calling out, I don't think right. That's a good call out. You're always supposed to punch up. You know, you shoot for the moon and maybe you hit a star, or whatever the old saying is going. That, yeah, Dominic Reyes needs to get that under control. What else you want to talk about on this card, Rick?
KGB, for instance, on Andrea Lee, she looked pretty good. I don't know if I agree with the Fight of the Night award that her and Veronica Macedo got, but it was a good fight all in all. I would say, though, that the ref we were talking about, Albuquerque, she let that fight play too long, where Macedo was on her back and KGB was kicking her legs, whereas in the main event, the ref stood that up pretty much right away. And that's where I don't like to see the good majority of the fight being taken place. But besides that, KGB looked good with her knees. She had a good arm and head throw that got reversed a couple times, but it was fun to see her on the bigger platform, and it's going to be interesting to see what she can do. It was a good fight. I don't know what else I would put in place of it, but yeah, Fight of the Night, I think, was a little bit of a stretch. But otherwise, I thought it was a good fight, and if it wasn't for the main fight night, and if it wasn't for the main event, I think we would have all been looking back on this card pretty positively. It could have honestly ended with Grasso and Suarez being the main event, and that would have sent everybody home happy. There were some pretty good comebacks, some pretty good knockouts. The first two fights on the Fox Sports 2 preliminary card, I mean, they ended it within the first 33 and 39 seconds. And one of them was a female fight where there was a sweet body liver kick, and she just crumbled. And then there was a KO slam and punches that ended up being a TKO. That was great. I will say that Brandon Moreno in the prelims got exposed by his opponent, as kind of like the Damian Maia syndrome, where you're more of a ground guy with punching power, or I'm sorry, with boxing, some boxing skills, but they're very limited. And Panteo was able to expose Brandon Moreno pretty badly, and Moreno almost shouldn't have gone out in the third round, in my opinion. He looked worse for wear. And yeah, otherwise had fun. But again, the pacing of these cards and everything about them sometimes just make you want to go take a nap.
You want to say anything about the opener?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Claudia Peleas versus Felipe Silva. That was a three-round fight. They ended up showing this in the Fox Sports 2 preliminary card because, like I mentioned, the first two fights went about 40 seconds. So they had the time to fill, and I'm glad they did, because I was going to skip the fight pass fights for the most part. But my God, this was one of the greatest comebacks in at least UFC fight pass preliminary history, because it was great. Polaris was was getting Claudio. I'm going to call him Claudio. Claudio was just getting dominated by Silva on the feet for the first two rounds. It was so bad. Again, there was a point where I thought they shouldn't even put Claudio out there. His side of his face was starting to swell like there was a golf ball inside of it. He was just getting hit clean, by his opponent Silva. But Silva, for whatever reason, maybe didn't want to put himself in further danger by going for the kill or whatever the mindset was. But he allowed himself to get caught in a leg bar or a knee bar, and he submitted a 2 minutes and 23 seconds in the third round. It was incredible. In fact, UFC on the post-fight show, they said with strikes thrown and all that other different statistics they have, this is one of the greatest comebacks, statistically speaking, in UFC history. So if you guys haven't seen it, check it out. It's on UFC Fight Pass. It was the first fight of the night.
Yeah, I think a lot of this card is pretty rewatchable from a fight perspective. It just the names on it are so underwhelming that it's just not a lot of sizzle to it. The only names on this fight were in the main event, and that happened to be a dud of a fight. So that's kind of how that goes. Rick, we got the
you know what, go ahead. Robert, real fast. Yeah. Sorry. You know who did have sizzle? You saying sizzle reminded me of this. I think there should be an extra performance of the night bonus, and it should go to the ring announcer, Joe Martinez. Martinez was displaying his amazing bilingual mic skills. I don't see Bruce Buffer ever doing that. In fact, it'd be hilarious if he was Martinez was told in the back after the show that he needs to stop doing that. They're like, listen, we know you have linguistic skills for days, how you just seemingly go in between English and whatever other languages you happen to know, which he knows a lot because this isn't the first time he's done that. They're like, but you're embarrassing Buffer. You're like, because did you hear him? He was just like going, he was introducing the fight in both languages, and he was just on fire. I think he just needs to work on his catchphrase, the are you ready thing. You know, he's trying to find his niche. But besides that, he was great. He was like the best performer of the night, like I said.
I love Joe Martinez, and I get excited. I don't like the whole Buffer thing. And it's not like he's bad at what he does. I just think it's just this cliche 60-year-old dude just screaming to pop a vein in his head. And it just, I don't know. Anything negative, I think of MMA, I kind of associate it with Buffer a little bit. He kind of fits into that. So I love when we get a Joe Martinez card. And like you said, he goes in between. And like as someone who kind of understands Spanish but would never dare speak Spanish to someone or like get on the phone with anybody, I love just to hear the words he throws out there and the way he does it and the way he goes intertwined. In general, translation last night was great. We were kind of having fun with some of the Portuguese translators a couple weeks ago. I thought the dude in the blue suit last night was pretty good in with his recall and the way he was keeping everything tight. So yeah, big ups on that part of the broadcast for sure. And that's something that's, you know, we've had a little fun with, but it can't be easy to get right ever from the translator or the ring announcer. That seems like the most thankless jobs in the world, just because it's in the moment so difficult, and anything you mess up, you know, trolls like us will just jump on immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the announcing was good too. I especially like though, and the post fight, they accidentally called Brendan Fitzgerald Brendan Fraser. That was great.
Well, I mean, if the mummy wants to get into fighting, so be it.
That was awesome. But I thought, yeah, and stuff like that, you know, Brendan Fitzgerald, they made it. He is doing good. Like I haven't had any complaints about him recently, and I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, and I think Jimmy Smith is fitting in pretty well within the UFC. I make fun that he's he's Diet Rogan, or he's Rogan's, you know, evil twin or something like that. I think there's starting to be a little bit of distinction between the two. Are you sensing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I do appreciate the fact though that in the I think I'm talking about the post show, because this is the first time I've actually watched it. I was watching it this morning. But the post show, they were just totally railing on the main event and just saying how bad and boring it was, and they're being critical of Damian Maia. And then they cut back to the announce team, and they have to like hype up the qualities of it, like the good things about it. And it was kind of like showing the two worlds, where announcing, you know, is a hard game to play, where you're trying to be critical of a fight as it's going on, but you're also, you know, you're also hyping it up so the people just don't turn off the TV. And I thought they did a good job about that.
Yeah, that's so weird with the television broadcast, where people are both an analyst and a salesman at the same time, and the goals of those two jobs aren't always, I mean, you know, they don't always intersect quite perfectly. Rick, we got a big holiday weekend coming up. I'm sure you're going to be firing up the Netflix and, you know, being in there under the AC in California, doing your thing, watching a lot of stuff. What are you going to have with you to drink while you're watching all that good that good stuff?
Probably a big bottle of wine.
And if you want a great bottle of wine, I would suggest you go with Wink. That's W-I-N-C. What Wink does is it makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched just to your taste and personalized just for you. And best of all, it's shipped right to your door with bottles that start at just $13. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It really is the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz and answer some simple questions that an average store clerk wouldn't think to ask you or wouldn't think to translate into a recommendation. Just simple questions like, how do you take your coffee, or how do you feel about blueberries? Then what Wink does, they send wines that are curated just to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized each monthly selection becomes. So the more they get to know you, the better they can service you. Each month there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rose. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/pwtorch and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/pwtorch for $20 off. trywink.com/pwtorch. Rick, let's go to a break, and on the other side, let's talk about a big move at ESPN that will really have an impact on the MMA media landscape.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conference and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say that this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Don't forget, get at us on Twitter, at MMA Torch and at MMA Livecast. Rick, we had a pretty seismic shift in the MMA media landscape over the past week when it was announced that Ariel Helwani of MMA Fighting would be moving over to ESPN, and this looks to be a complete move. He'll be hosting a podcast with Chael Sonnen on a weekly basis, and he will also be a big part in a lot of the UFC coverage that they're going to be, ESPN's going to have now that they've acquired that 15-event inventory from the UFC. And it looks like the MMA Hour, which is sort of the top news-making podcast of the week in MMA, where, I mean, Helwani's just an animal, and he goes on there for like 4 straight hours and interviews people. I don't know anyone who's ever listened to that thing from start to finish, but it's a good thing to pick out. You can pick and choose which you want to listen to, and it's all repurposed and repackaged very nicely. But this is a big move, and it's more than just a media story, because I do feel that this represents how serious ESPN is taking their acquisition of those UFC fights. Now, this doesn't mean that, hopefully it doesn't mean that Helwani is once again going to be kind of working for the UFC the way it was discovered he was in 2016. I think this is going to be more of the traditional relationship that a rights holder like an ESPN has with a sports entity and then the journalists they have that are there. So it's, he won't be, hopefully he's not being paid directly by the promotion. But Rick, I wanted to get your take, on this entire move, and were you surprised that it's happening, and how do you think the fit is going to be?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think Helwani will do a good job over at ESPN. It's got to be, in some ways, every journalist's dream to work for an ESPN-like, you know, entertainment conglomerate, and he can go many different places from there. I do think it's unfortunate that we'll be missing him on the MMA Hour. Like you're saying, the show is repackaged very well, and it's an established show. But this just gives another opportunity for another MMA outlet out there to go up there and take that spot. And it's not even saying that that show will necessarily be over, because there's other people working with that group who can kind of pick up the reins. But Helwani is kind of he's a figurehead in the sport. And hopefully now that he's with ESPN, he doesn't blow UFC's lid like he did with the Brock Lesnar UFC 200 thing, and he learned from that. I mean, he can be a journalist and everything, but he's there to help promote the UFC. So maybe he's not working for the UFC necessarily, but he needs to also know kind of who's paying the bills or why he's even there to begin with. That being said as well, I'm looking forward to him being paired with Chael Sonnen, because I like recently listening to Chael Sonnen's analysis of fights that are upcoming or fights that have just happened. He does a podcast of his own, obviously, but then he repackages those interviews and puts them on YouTube in like 2 to 3 minute blocks where it's just Chael talking about the fights. And he's been right a lot of the time, and he gives interesting perspective on things. And it'll be kind of weird to have Chael Sonnen back into the UFC full by analyzing these fights with Helwani, but strictly on a ESPN level, not a UFC level. So kind of Chael's playing both worlds with both Bellator and ESPN and talking about UFC.
Right, and that makes me think that in general, these two, specifically Helwani and Sonnen, will be as independent as possible. In, you know, because that means that the UFC had no say in any of this. I would assume that they'd be promoting a Bellator fighter who's in the biggest Bellator story of the year in their Grand Prix, and someone in Helwani that they've had such a bad relationship with in the last 2 years. I will completely disagree with you and saying that I don't think Helwani needs to watch his place in any way. I think as a journalist, you do what you do, and you deal with it later. It'll be a test, though, to see how – I think Helwani's presence, though, is a litmus test to see what this relationship is going to look like, because I think we've seen that the UFC had a ton of control in their relationship with Fox. Now, that's a different thing because they were building a new network basically around the UFC, and as we always say, FS1 is the UFC network. Let's see how it goes now. They're technically doing the same thing because they're building up a new streaming service, and – seemingly, with an acquisition like Helwani, they are building that streaming service around the UFC, around their UFC rights. That's what that's going to be the main thing of why people subscribe to that. So I'm curious to see what influence the UFC has over ESPN's coverage. Is it going to be, as they say with FS1, is it going to be state-run TV? I don't think so at this point, but you never know, because ESPN has in the past caved to the likes of like the NFL, another rights holder on different stories and different coverage. So that's always going to be an ongoing thing when you're supposed to be a journalist but covering something where everybody makes money in the process. What do you expect? Do you expect any other dominoes are going to fall in this ESPN UFC relationship? Are we going to see any other pieces moving towards ESPN?
Yeah, I mean, there should be, because they're going to want to fill a lot of content on ESPN Plus with MMA-related news. And so this is, I think, the first step into a couple of different other interesting prospects. I do think, though, like you said, the state-run media and whatnot, it would be different if Chael and Helwani were going to NBC Sports to talk about MMA. But the fact that they're going to ESPN, which is going to be a partner with the UFC – while they're independent, and they're probably not going to be UFC's first choice as two figureheads on ESPN talking about their promotion, there is a sort of, we'll see if there is a bias, but there is a sort of thing where if Helwani starts going on about union rights for MMA fighters or talking about, I don't know, all these other things that kind of make UFC look bad, it'll be interesting if UFC tries to influence ESPN to have him pull the reins or have Helwani go back to YouTube.
Yeah, and that's why I think this is just a more interesting story than just, you know, a media guy flipping entities, because I think there are larger implications at play that might not be seen right now at this current time. But yeah, the other thing, the only last thing I'll say, which is more of a meta media thing, is I hope, though, I'm happy for people like Helwani, like you said, and he has said it's been his dream his whole life, you know, to work at ESPN, and he's always been a big fan of American sports. Talking about his fandom of like the New York Knicks and his baseball fandom that he tweets about often. So I'm happy for them. I hope, though, with them doing that, it doesn't just kill a lot of the smaller MMA media. Not necessarily that it's all so tiny, but the, you know, MMA media exists almost exclusively as an internet thing. There's very few people, you know, a Brett Okamoto is the one exception, or some of the stuff they do on FS1 that isn't part of like the major machine of cable television. So I hope they just don't suck everything up in the wake. I hope a lot of the guys at MMA Fighting, MMA Junkie, Sure Dog, and etc. stay in place, so we still have a voice of the sport outside of the monolith of ESPN. But that's enough about that. Let's talk about something that's completely wacky but will not go away. As I am saying this to you, Rick, I have ESPN on in the background, as I generally do. Ironically, if we're talking ESPN, I generally do in the podcast. I have it on a mute. There's some women's softball going on, and then there's a local commercial with an attorney here in New Mexico, and the spokesman for this attorney happens to be Chuck Liddell. I'm not making this up at all. The commercial just ran 3 minutes ago. You could, you know, if anyone wants to really investigate, they could find in my local market where the commercials air and who endorses them. But yes, Chuck Liddell was on my TV a minute ago, knocking out somebody and standing side by side with an attorney. And there's billboards in town with Chuck Liddell on it. Chuck Liddell has also invited a fellow light heavyweight to come fight him in Albuquerque. That would be Mr. John Jones. What the heck is going on with this Twitter beef between Chuck Liddell and John Jones? It's the dumbest thing ever, yet I'm endlessly entertained by it.
Yeah, if John Jones wants more haters, he should just go and fight Chuck Liddell and destroy him, because that would make him the most hated man in MMA history. That would be bad, and I hope no governing body would sanction a thing like that. That's John Jones just needs to stay quiet. Every instinct that Jones has, he needs to go against. It needs to be... I think there was an episode where George Costanza was doing the opposite. He was like opposite George, where every intuition or instinct he had in the past, he would do the opposite and he became successful. And I think John Jones needs to implement that Seinfeld-like theory. So if Chuck Liddell is talking on Twitter or whatever social media thing about fighting him, he just needs to ignore it and take the high road. John Jones needs to check out the high road. It's a nice little area.
Yeah, but if he gets on the high road, he needs to make sure he's clear of substances and doesn't hit anybody on the high road and then drive away, because that right. would be bad. Yeah, it's just hilarious that John Jones even responded to like, you're at the position of power here, John Jones. You don't need a – Chuck Liddell is using you to try to stay in the headlines. Like, why are you going to feed him any oxygen? I do like the George Costanza comparison when he orders the completely different meal that he normally would, and right. the woman looks at him because she ordered the same meal. Yeah, I feel sometimes with John Jones, he really is in a lot of ways like the way some people view like a Roman Reigns, in the fact that his instincts as far as how he speaks in public and stuff are always the opposite of probably what he should say in a situation, even if it's the truthful thing to say. Very bad at PR would be how I would describe John Jones. The bigger story here, though, is Chuck Liddell, who is making all this noise about having another fight with Tito Ortiz. A couple weeks ago, Aaron Kreider wrote an editorial up on MMA Torch explaining why this would be a terrible idea, even if Oscar De La Hoya is promoting it. Would you watch Tito versus Chuck 3 in 2018 or 2019?
Of course, because we're going to have to talk about it. But as a fan, yeah, I'd still watch it.
Yeah, it's not like I wouldn't watch it. I feel terrible about watching it, that I was contributing to to what was going on. But that's the weird thing about MMA is I think we're all in our ivory towers and all on our high horses so often about things that shouldn't happen. But there's not a movement away from that. If anything, sometimes Bellator has shown us that that is what people will pay to see. People will pay to see train wrecks in this sport, and that's just something we have to deal with. Do you think the fight's actually going to happen, though?
I hope not. You know, whether it happens, there's a very solid chance it could. But I think Chuck Liddell, he's just probably not happy with the way his career ended. And Tito retired, but you know, anytime Chael Sonnen calls him out or anyone does anything, it seems like he's ready to get back in there. And for Chuck Liddell, I mean, he's really got nothing to prove either in his career or especially against Tito. I mean, he was dominant in that feud. So I hope it doesn't happen, but who knows what's going on? Does Chuck need the money? Is Chuck just looking for past glory? Does he want to stay in the headlines? I mean, is he not happy with his current role since the UFC changed management? He doesn't seem to be one of these veterans who are sticking around and being an ambassador. I would like to know more context as to why Chuck is deciding to do this. Or does he really just have this huge beef with Tito he just can't get over after all these years?
Yeah, and he made Tito look like a fool, though, back in their primes. Like, he kind of broke the myth of Tito in a lot of ways. He, you know, the Tito was never quite the same after their series of fights, and the impressions of him were never the same. But then we're a decade out from people wanting Chuck Liddell to retire because he was taking too much damage. That was a decade ago, and now the guy wants to get back in. Yeah, it's just sad because he's such a high profile guy in fighting. This seems to happen to a lot of fighters, but they sort of go off. They're kind of out of sight, out of mind. They want to come back and they want to do their thing. You know, Chuck Liddell is one of the pillars that helped build the sport, and for him to come back in a fight like this would just be sad. I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
It's weird. I wish that his role with the UFC would have stayed, especially the more we kind of hear that him and Matt Hughes really were just on payroll to be on payroll. Just Dana kind of just hooked them up. I mean, obviously, it kind of sets a bad precedent because it just shows, if you're friends with Dana, you get paid, you know, to do nothing. But being that we're seeing this happen, and we were before Matt Hughes's unfortunate accident with the train, he was making noise about fighting in Bellator. It's actually a very sad that this is the reality that we are all living in. Rick, let's go to another break, and when we come back, we'll take a quick look at some fights coming up this weekend and even discuss the impact that sports gambling might have on MMA.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Rick, are you going to spend your holiday on a Sunday morning watching a UFC card from the UK?
Probably.
Good to know. I thought you were going to give some snide remark about, no, you wouldn't waste your time doing that. But apparently not. That's how you're going to be spending your time. What's going on with the UK right now? I mean, we've got Bellator and the UFC both going there this weekend. The WWE ran Raw and SmackDown from the UK this past weekend, and there was this little wedding that happened there apparently yesterday. So like the UK cannot get out of my Twitter feed for some reason. It's nothing but UK stuff all around. And good for them that they get a card. They get their, you know, biannual cards, and they haven't got Michael Bisping on it like they've been wanting, but maybe that'll happen in the future. But they do have a pretty good main event for this one. We've got welterweight Stephen Thompson taking on the surging Darren Till. Who you got in this one, Rick?
I think I got Darren Till. It's hard to say, but I want to pick Darren Till because when I watch fights, I want to cheer for the guy who I actually want to win. And I'm over Stephen Wonderboy Thompson completely. His last couple fights for me have been just kind of like the Damian Maia effect, where they've been just kind of boring for me to watch. His fight, he had Jorge Masvidal. That was okay. But his second fight, fight with Tyrone Woodley was just a snoozer. God, that was a really bad way to start 2017. And then I really didn't even like his first fight with Tyrone Woodley that much at UFC 205. I remember everybody saying, like, you know, because that was their first big thing in New York and how good that fight was. And it was a majority draw and they had to go back to it. I didn't want to see that fight again. And, you know, ever since then, he lost to Tyrone Woodley. Like I said, he beat Jorge Masvidal. And now he's against Darren Till. And I hope Darren Till just smokes him. Like, and I just, there's no future in MMA where I'm excited to see Wonderboy Thompson fighting Tyrone Woodley again.
Yeah, I'm a real big Wonderboy supporter, I guess you would say. I find him endlessly entertaining and will watch him wherever he's at. But like you said, I don't want to see him face Woodley, which he would be in a good position to do if he were to win this fight. He wouldn't be I don't think he'd be the next direct contender, but he'd be toward the top of that mountain.
You're a big Machida fan, too. You said that last week. And you're a big Thompson fan. So you like the karate guys.
I trained in karate for like 13 years.
Well,
so,
there you go.
So that's why I have a bias there. You're right. So that's why I like it. I understand, though, when it's not entertaining, though, or when it's not fun. Like, I also have eyes. So I'm not one of these, you know, one of these BJJ guys that will just, you know, they talk about their beautiful art and it would be unentertaining. Like, I am aware of that, but it's not like Darren Till is unentertaining in any way. Darren Till is an extremely exciting fighter. Somebody that will be surging, that'll have that crowd will be completely into him and completely off of Wonder Boy in that fight. Hey, and to your criticism, I don't find Paul Felder entertaining in any way, shape or form. So there's that.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I find certain fighters who are boring, like I said, I'm a big fan of John Fitch, you know, and he's probably the most boring fighter in the entire world. You just, some things that you like about either the personalities, that's why MMA is so cool. It's personality and talent driven. You don't need both of them, though. It could be one thing. And for you, it's talent. Thompson's such a vanilla character for me.
Oh,
and
no, his gimmick is terrible. It's bad.
And his I get it, your nickname is Wonder Boy, but stop coming out to the Tenacious D song. It's so dumb, in my opinion. I'm just so over that. That's like a song that I wanted to stop hearing. I'm going to get a lot of Tenacious D fan haters here now, but that's a song I stopped wanting to hear but about 10 years ago. And so, I don't know. He's kind of got that Sage Northcutt sort of like white bread, you know, happy to be around.
A good Sage Northcutt. That's the thing. I think Sage Northcutt's terrible, so we don't have to really worry about him in the main event scene.
Oh.
Yeah, outside of the fight sports, my other passion is, you know, heavy metal, punk rock, rock music, and I hate Tenacious D. So the way Jim Cornette feels about the Young Bucks, I feel about Tenacious D. So I have no use for any of that. And yeah, Thompson's whole thing is kind of dumb, very like almost vanilla on purpose. I think it's part of it is just that's kind of his personality. But and we talked about Ariel Helwani earlier, back in 2016, I was listening to the MMA Hour, and he compared Stephen Thompson to like a knockoff John Cena, like the worst parts of Cena, like the corny. I just, by golly, I'm happy to be here and I'm going to put on a show for you and all that. That's exactly the gimmick that Wonder Boy is working here. Is Darren Till too similar to Conor McGregor? Do you feel that, does he have so much of a, people like him and have identified him that he's got this McGregor vibe to him. Is that going to work against him?
I think that he does have a McGregor vibe, sure, but he uses it in a different way. And I think that UFC needs to – they're behind him. They've done a lot of, like, Rising Stars videos and stuff. But to compare the two, I don't know. That's a good point. I really didn't think about that. I think McGregor's a little bit more marketable. Well, obviously, he's a lot more marketable because of his character and just the way he looks, the tattoos and everything. I know Darren Till has tattoos, but – there's just something, there's an it factor that even though they're similar, they're still worlds apart. And I think that there might even be, because Conor McGregor's huge in America. Like, he's the huge in the United States, not just with the Irish fans, but with everybody. And I think that Darren Till, not to get into like generalizations about countries and everything like that, but there's England and Ireland have a different perception here in the United States as far as I don't know. I don't want to get eating crow in a minute, but I think that Conor being the Fighting Irish means a different thing here in the United States than the Fighting English does.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, we talk about stereotypes and all that, and you don't want to ever reinforce the stereotypes, but those things do tend to play out in MMA very specific, like very transparently. Stereotypes tend to manifest themselves in nice and in ugly ways. I wonder sometimes the McGregor comparison isn't just as Americans, we see a guy with tattoos who knocks people out with an accent who has a lot of confidence, and so we just, oh, they're like McGregor, you know. It can be a lazy analysis at times. No, he's a pretty interesting dude, very smart. I mean, as is McGregor. McGregor's actually highly intelligent, even though he won't let you know that all the time in recent times. I think with McGregor too, there's a rags to riches story there too that has helped him a lot, and people identify with his overall story. It's hard now with McGregor to put any of that into context because he's just so far his own enigma right now, and he's so far removed from any normalcy that we, you know, you forget about what made him exciting in the first place. It's almost like a totally different person that he is now. It's fascinating. Is there anything else on the card that you think will be worth watching or going out of your way or catches your interest in any way?
Yeah, I mean, seeing Neil Magny fight is always kind of interesting. He's kind of that guy who you never really think about being one in the top 10, but every time he goes against another guy in the top 10, he usually wins. So he's something to think of. I just think Neil Magny, though, the UFC will never get behind him. He's not the kind of fighter that they want to just shoot to the moon or anything like that, despite his impressive record. I mean, he beat Carlos Condit recently, and so that was interesting. But he seems to be win one, lose one lately, so we'll see. And there's a couple other fights with some people who have names on the card, but it's hard to say this is going to be a boring fight card and I want to skip it, because the fight card we just had last night, everything but the main event was good for the most part, except for the Zach Cummins fight. And I had a good time watching it. So that might be the case with this one too. And this one actually has a main event I'm interested in, unlike last night's.
Yeah, the only other thing I would note on the card is we do have Judo Dan fighting on the prelim card, and I'm a big fan of Judo Dan for no other reason than it looks like he's literally held together with like glue and scotch tape when he comes out there. You know, the guy's like 70 years old and he's all bandaged up. Hasn't gone well for him lately. I hope he gets back on track, just, you know, for the fun of it.
Do we need six fights on the main card, though? I'm tired of this.
No, and I remember this card last year, this, you know, the holiday card that's on the morning. It's paced just like the evening card. So, and from the American perspective, like, you wake up in the morning and it's in progress, but it doesn't end till like the afternoon. And it's just like it kills your whole day. Like, to me, it would be fun. And again, I'm saying this from a strictly American perspective, and I realize you can't just feed one market. But it would be fun to just kind of have a morning of MMA, and then you get on with your day instead of having to dedicate a whole day to it, because it kind of has the same effect of you lose like your night. Say maybe here you're gonna lose your day.
Yeah, and I didn't realize Dan Kelly was on this fight card till I was really examining it. I hope he wins. He's lost his last two fights, and I actually really like Dan Kelly. He's kind of just like that. He looks like a dad who just is like, oh, I'm gonna start fighting.
He just looks like the dad that has to beat everyone up, like in the town, like in a very cliched movie where, you know, the hooligans come to town and the dad has to take him out and shut him straight and teach him lessons. That's definitely Judo Dan.
Paul Kelly.
we got a Bellator card this weekend too, on the 25th, and on Friday more specifically. It's a surprise, surprise, another London card that will be taking place earlier in the day, but airing at night. Some interesting stuff on here. We got MVP fighting here. We got Phil Davis fighting on this card. I said interesting, but he's very uninteresting, but a big name. You got Anastasia Yankova fighting on the prelim card, which will be on the Paramount Network. Let's see if there's any shenanigans there with making weight or the such. But in the two headline fights, you have Gegard Mousasi going for the middleweight title. Do you think he gets it here?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope he comes back fresh too, because I mean, he won his last fight, but he got his butt kicked. Like, that was a hard fight to watch after it was done against Shemenko. Like, he just looked like he got hit by a car and then was T-boned by another car. So if he comes in healthy, I think he can do it for sure.
And in the main event, you have sort of a fight in the Bellator World Heavyweight Grand Prix. It's being billed as an alternate fight, which I don't know why you have to have a fight as an alternate fight and people just can't be alternates. I guess there can only be one alternate. But you got Mirko Krokop taking on Roy Nelson. That can be a train wreck of a fight, but I am intrigued by it for sure. I definitely will be watching when it's airing on delay. Who you got in that one?
Oh, I got Roy Nelson, but I was just looking at Mirko's Wikipedia page, and I didn't realize he's been so busy since he left the UFC. He's just been tearing it up and rising for the most part. I remember he had that Gabriel Gonzaga fight where he won by TKO, and that was cool. But then, yeah, he's just been over at Ryzen just destroying people, it looks like. But Roy Nelson has been doing pretty good himself. I know that he's won some, he lost some. He lost against Matt Mitrione, you know, and he lost against Alexander Volkov and whatnot. But he's been imploring a lot more of his wrestling background, Roy Nelson has, in his recent fights. And it's been working pretty well. But I think as he's been doing the wrestling, he's kind of gone away from being an effective knockout fighter. And he's also had very, very boring fights. And I think this has the potential to be a very, very boring fight. If Mirko doesn't get Roy Nelson out of there early, which Roy Nelson, as we all know, is really hard to knock out, then this could just be another one where he just gets lied on top of by Roy Nelson and just gets hammered on the ground.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point that we finally, a decade in, we finally get the top secret jiu-jitsu skills that Rogan was always telling us that Roy Nelson had. But in exchange for that, we lose the big country who just goes out there and smokes fools or gets smoked himself very quickly. So there is that. Pretty entertaining card. Another one, I think, on DVR. If you're sensitive to the spoilers, obviously that'll be kind of difficult. Not a ton of people tweet about Bellator, let's be honest with you. Like, I think you can be on social media and just be kind of aware of the spoilers and still watch the card on Friday night and have a decent enough time. Good way to kick off the holiday weekend. We did get an email this week. Remember, the email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com, and it was from our good friend Valentin from Russia. We don't hear from Valentin as much now that we don't take callers, but I'm glad he stays in contact with the show through email. And he wanted to know something this week. He says, "Hey guys, it's Valentin from Russia. My question for today is, which seats are best for the money at UFC events? Of course, I have this question because UFC will hold its first event in Russia in September, so I'm trying to figure out what ticket to look for. Thanks as always." Well, thanks, Valentin, for sending in that question. Rick, you've been to a lot of live MMA events in your time. What would you suggest for Valentin to look for?
I always like seats that are, you know, in hard camera. And what I associate wrestling and UFC shows kind of similarly. I know that the way the cages and the ring is, the entrances kind of mess things up a little bit. But there's not really a hard camera in MMA necessarily because they have guys up on the cage and they get all perspectives. But if you're not within, you got the ground seats, right? And then everything's behind it is up on the, lack of a better term, the bleachers. If you can't get a decent seat on the ground, don't get like 10 seats back. Just get up there on the bleachers in second or third row up there and just be able to enjoy your view like that. I also have heard, even though I haven't been here, that it is also fun to get the entrance seats. So, like, if you're having people coming to the octagon, that's a good spot to be. I don't think you're going to get any seats near where they apply the Vaseline and do the ref check or anything like that, because that typically goes to UFC handing out tickets to their fighters. So I would say if you can, get a little close on the ground, obviously, but if you get pushed too far back, just get the front bleacher seats, and those are always ironically the ones that go first for the most part. And go from there. I really would be interested to hear, Valentin, how much those tickets are going for, because it being the first fight in your guys' area, I'd imagine they're going to price those up. And for a fight night, I know it's not a pay-per-view, but if they're smart, they'll make the tickets reasonable so that everybody can go, you know, and they have a big sellout quickly. But I have a feeling they're going to do the New York method and try to make some money.
Yeah, I do as well, and it's gonna be a lot of promotion, even though like Habib won't be a part of that car. I gotta have a feeling he'll be involved somehow in what's going on there. Yeah, Valentin, definitely get back to us. Give us some insight on how what's being promoted and how prevalent's being promoted, and give us some insight on the cost, because I think that'll be very interesting to analyze. This, you know, Russian thing is part of the new business of the UFC in a lot of ways. So we definitely want to see what's going on there and how they are handling that. And I'll just echo Rick's statements in general. Like, I think for wrestling events, if you're on the, it's such a weird thing. They sell these seats that are, you know, technically very close to the action, so they seem like good seats. And then you realize, unless you're like 7 feet tall, they're terrible seats. Because you're just competing with people in front of you and at the whim of them standing up and whatnot. I'm not sure what the layout of where the Russian show is going to be, but in terms of, like, when you think of, like, American football or basketball, the 50-yard line seat for a football game is actually a great seat in this situation, because you're elevated just enough to see over everybody on top. And then an elevated seat really isn't a bad thing for the fight game, because you get some good perspectives on what you're seeing, and just think of line of sight is always my general rule, more so than how close or far. It's just how well you can see it. Sometimes if you're a little further away, you can actually see better than being super close to the action. Rick, some big national news came down over the past week, where it is no longer federally illegal for a state to authorize sports gambling. Now, still, you can only really sports gamble in Nevada, because that's where it was okay. But the federal ban on sports gambling has been lifted. So we still don't know which states are going to legalize sports betting. But this will have some implications in MMA for sure, in MMA fandom. Betting is something on this show we use as a reference quite often, where we cite betting lines over who's the favorite and who's not. The UFC and their broadcast incorporates betting lines quite often to explain things. You know, it's more of a tool than an actual, you know, betting indicator. It's a tool to handicap the fight and to analyze the fight. What impact do you think this could potentially have on MMA, Rick?
I think this can help out MMA a lot as far as interest goes, because MMA is a sport where you can bet on individual fights, obviously, but you can bet on outcomes and you can put parlays together. And I'm not the biggest gambler in the entire world, but anytime I go to Nevada, I always put down bets for future upcoming UFC cards. And I love putting down I love putting parlays together. And sometimes I go to MMA websites where they actually give, like, little nicknames to certain kind of parlays, where it's like you got three underdogs and you got a favorite, and you put it together and give it a snappy title. And sometimes they can give you a good payout and everything. And so if this flushes out, and they say that, you know, the federal ban's up and that at least 14 states are looking into making sports gambling legalized. If California is one of them, I can't wait. And it's going to be either good or bad things for me in the future, because it's a lot of fun. It makes the fights more interesting, but also kind of adversely, if you have gambled on MMA before, it could have a really bad effect on your viewing experience. So I wouldn't go for broke. So, for instance, if you bet on Maya last night and he was a make it or break it for your parlay, you would have probably been pretty angry by round three. So gamble within your, you know, gamble with your head, not over it. But I personally think it'll make it more interesting for my MMA viewing experience.
Yeah, and like cards like last night, where there's not a lot of interest going in, if you got something writing on it, suddenly it's much more interesting, and you're much more apt to enjoy and to watch and to pay attention closely. We'll see how the leagues embrace this. I think the UFC would be more open to it than many other of the sports leagues, specifically because their whole culture is so much Nevada-based anyway. So I am looking forward to them really, for the UFC side, showcasing, you know, who the favorites are, who the underdogs are, some parlays. I wonder, in the new broadcast that we keep talking about, how much they're going to incorporate that. And I think it's going to be a fun aspect to MMA to add to it, and it's so much of a simpler bet once you understand, you know, just the pluses and the minuses and how that works. It's very simple to bet on MMA, because I know sometimes there are the timing you can bet on and other little prop bets, but really you're picking winners and losers. It's the simplest thing in the world, so, and that's just a fun thing to do. And I think it'll be a net positive for the UFC overall, and I don't think it'll have negative impacts on the sport, because I think You talk about, oh, well, that's, the argument always is, well, shady figures are going to be around the sport. Shady figures are already around the sport. I don't think this is going to change it. And people have been betting on MMA long before it became legal. And, you know, and obviously in other countries, it's been legal and mainstream for a long time. And so it's all good with the sports gambling and as far as the UFC goes. Rick, have you ever bet on professional wrestling?
No, I'm not that kind of guy. And I've been told over and over not to do it. And not to interrupt the segue, but I will say that since you were talking about this, this might not have a huge impact on the UFC, but I think it'll help Bellator out. Because I know a lot of guys, oh, by a lot I mean two or three guys, who have made serious money on Bellator cards. Because you wouldn't think to bet on them necessarily, because you wouldn't even think to watch them half the time. But Bellator can be the one who really reaps the rewards from this situation.
No, that's very interesting, and that's I don't know a ton about sports betting, but I do know sometimes under publicized sports tend to be where you can find inefficiencies in the odds, just because there's such focus being put on McGregor Mayweather and how to balance the books on that, that maybe something a little under the radar can slip by. Yeah, betting on pro wrestling just seems silly, just because why would you bet on something that has a predetermined outcome? That, you know, it's just, I mean, it's fun to prognosticate, but that's just ugh. And we know the way that companies' whims can just change so quickly that it just seems like such a foolish thing to do. So yeah, I would not recommend betting on pro wrestling. I also don't recommend looking at the odds, because it ruins the enjoyment of the show, especially as right as they tend to be, which they're right to a scary amount. You wonder where those leaks generally are coming from within the company. Let's go to one last break, Rick, and at the other side, let's talk about the biggest talk in pro wrestling this week, the All In Show.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Rick, we talked in a prior segment about all the things the UK's got going on in combat sports and in society in general. How about all the things that Zach and all these guys from Chicago have going on? Let's just list them. They've got a massive UFC card coming up. They've got Money in the Bank, which looks to be a stacked card this year. And they have the All In Show, the biggest independent wrestling show in modern American history, all happened in Chicago. You've been in Chicago in the past, Rick. Are you jealous of the city of Chicago right now?
Yeah. What are you guys trying to prove? Okay. We get it. You're a big city, but you don't have to have every single cool event that's coming up this year in your city.
Yeah, it really is just ridiculous and terrible, and I hope Zach goes to none of it. That way he doesn't enjoy any of it. Just kidding, Zach. I actually hope you go to all of it, and you can be on the show so you can get, you know, your in-person correspondence on everything that is happening in Chicago. Well, let's talk about All In. This was really right after we got done recording last week, Rick. That became the big news as soon as we got done recording the All In Show with the 10,000-seat arena in Chicago. Sold out in about 30 minutes, which is unbelievable. I thought the show would end up being a sellout. No way did I think it would be that type of sellout that instantly. Overall, what do you make of this, Rick?
I think that it's good news for the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes. It's good news for independent wrestling that it could be sold that quickly. It just kind of shows how much of a force is behind this media. I think that it's bad news for Ring of Honor, even though Ring of Honor features these talent, to show that they have never been able to do a 10,000 seat arena with the brand name that they put so much time and money into, and then that Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks can do it with just some made up All In title is does not reflect well on them. And I think that I know we want to talk about All In, but All In in some ways is a reflection, in my opinion, of not just independent wrestling and the high points of it, but also some of the low points with Ring of Honor really not getting some they haven't been catering to their fans recently, especially their hardcores, with their streaming service crashing all the time during live events and their just poor customer service reviews that they've had lately. And so I kind of like that this is not only hopefully going to wake up Ring of Honor, but it's going to wake up the WWE and show that, hey, this group of wrestlers were able to do something that hasn't been done since the days of WCW.
It really is amazing. And what do you think? We'll take this quick Ring of Honor sidebar. What do you think Ring of Honor needs to do to improve right now?
I don't know. It's hard to say because they've spent so many years kind of getting this negative connotation. You know, their streaming service way back when they had the iPay-per-views, that was a fiasco. They would work for some people, they wouldn't work for other people. And we're talking like 2013, 2012, 2014. I mean, they just year after year after year. And now the streaming service, everybody's excited about it, but then it crashes the first event they have, and the customer service, people take screenshots of what they say to them when they're complaining about the events and, hey, I paid for this, and their just responses have been terrible. Their in-ring product is good, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of hype behind it, and some of their shows have fallen really flat, but they have the talent there to do it. And I think Bruce Mitchell is the one who said that there seems to be waves of popularity. I mean, Ring of Honor was popular for a while. Then NXT became huge for a while, and NXT seems to be, unless they have a show happening, just one of their events, they seem to kind of calm down a little bit. Then New Japan is big, but now All In is huge right now, and it's just like, it's not necessarily fads, but there are waves of popularity, and I don't see Ring of Honor jumping back on that wave anytime soon, even as they share these hot brands. Like I said, they have the Young Bucks, they have the Cody Rhodes, and they have the New Japan athletes, but they're starting to get that impact sort of stink to them, and they need to figure that out, because I used to be a big Ring of Honor fan, and I haven't even got the streaming service
No,
yet.
And I don't plan on it either, because it's not that cheap, and from what we've seen from the quality perspective, it's just not something that, with all the streaming costs that you have on a monthly basis, not something you really need to pay for. Ring of Honor is kind of an interesting case study in that they were the first people in the, you know, the Web 2.0 era, or whatever you want to call it, the era after the ECW shut down, to really get the internet fans. But they haven't ever been able to deliver quality wrestling to the more mainstream internet fan. They've never been able to get, you know, the pay-per-views and the streaming done well, and that has hurt them. And I think when people have good wrestling, they don't always realize it or care to discuss it. But I don't think the booking in Ring of Honor is actually that great. I think it's like it's a terrible story. It's just not 3 hours every Monday, so we don't just complain about it all the time the way we do with WWE. I don't think their booking is very impressive. And then NXT became, you know, like the corporate version of Ring of Honor, so that made them not cool. PWG became the super exclusive version of Ring of Honor, and then New Japan had all the fun stuff of Ring of Honor, and so like they took a piece of it. This All In show, and we're going to get back to that now, is part of the Ring of Honor legacy, in that like they were the top independent American wrestling company who's backed by a major conglomerate, so people don't even like to refer to them always as indie wrestling. But to me, whenever you're in a small arena like that, you're indie wrestling. I don't care what is behind you, or at least you're small time wrestling in that respect. But the All In show is interesting, and I've had a little fun with it on Twitter. I'm impressed by what's being done, and I'm interested by what's done. I just don't care about it so much. Like, it's just not my thing, and it doesn't have to be. Wrestling is very diverse at the moment, and there's a lot of different things for a lot of different people. Like we were saying with the MMA discussion, just whatever kind of floats your boat. So I just don't care about this, and I think the specific strain of Bullet Club fans are just annoying to me for some odd reason. I don't know why I don't click with them. One concept I do want to discuss here on this is something that I find very interesting, is we criticize WWE and the UFC for marketing their brand over stars. Those same people have had no criticism about All In basically doing the same thing, if you think about it. I don't think people are buying – there's not 10,000 tickets to see the Young Bucks and Cody and Nick Aldis. There's 10,000 people buying for a subcultural movement. What's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially considering the only match that's been announced is Nick Aldis defending the NWA Championship against Cody Rhodes. I mean, who's going to buy thousands of tickets to see that? I think, like you said, it's fans jumping on a wave. But Wade Keller brought this up. I think it's also ticket scalpers and stuff. Like, it's just certain groups of people or companies buying up these tickets because they also see the possibility in this wave. And it'll be interesting to hear the rumors when the show gets closer and closer, how much higher the tickets are going to be marked up for these fans who really want to go.
Yeah, because definitely it's a hot ticket at the moment, and it's going to stay that way, I think, regardless of what gets advertised, because there's always going to be the possibility of, oh, what do they got up their sleeve? Which I got to believe they got something, even if it's not Punk, there'll be something interesting. The show has to be good if they ever plan on doing another one of these. And I think there's enough, personal sweat investment from everybody involved in it that it will be good. I think it says something else that nobody has talked about. Meltzer likes to point out that it's kind of amazing that less people watch wrestling probably than any other time in history, yet those who watch wrestling are the consumers who are willing to spend more on wrestling, which is an interesting fact, and it's something that, like, you definitely see WWE has taken note of the way they set up their massive weekends, and now we're seeing the indie version of that. But I also wonder how this affects other parts of how pro wrestling fans are looked at. Pro wrestling fans are willing to spend a lot on this thing because it's a fly-in event the way WrestleMania is. Are pro wrestling fans not the poverty-stricken people that advertisers have always framed them as? I'm wondering if that has changed somehow, because that's always been the thing, that despite the ratings that Raw gets better than almost anything else on cable television, yeah, but it's low-income, low-information kind of viewers that advertisers weren't attracted to. Do you think that concept maybe needs to be rethought? Because there seems to be a little bit of affluence in people that can fly to Chicago and spend a weekend watching wrestling and go to conventions, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, maybe the income needs to be rethought in the stereotype of wrestling fans. But I think the thing that stings more than that is the intelligence factor, because I know that me being a wrestling fan, I'm less worried about exposing myself to coworkers for them to – I'm not worried about them thinking I'm poor. I'm worried about them thinking I'm stupid. And the only reason they think we're stupid is because they're like, don't you know it's fake? Why would you watch a fake fight? So income aside, there's still that stigma of we're fascinated by a sport that's, sports entertainment. It's all acrobatics. And it's hard for people who aren't into it to get why we are into it. Like, if you like boxing, yeah, it can be brutal. Or if you like MMA, it can be brutal, but it's real. It's a fight. Whereas wrestling is this performance that still has a stigma attached to it, the performance itself. And, so that's my thought on that. Even though we can be rich, but we're also still dummies in a lot of people's minds.
A bunch of rich idiots we are, I guess, especially. But yeah, no, right. And that stigma is still there, regardless. And no matter how high-minded wrestling tends to be, and I feel like even podcasts like this, we're always trying to talk about pro wrestling in such an intellectual way to a point. And no matter what you do there, the mainstream will never accept wrestling as what it actually is, and that's just unfortunate. But I do wonder if the income thing has to be reconsidered, or at least thought about in a different way. On this all-in thing, what is there an MMA equivalent in any way that could happen to what's going on with this kind of like move? Is there a group of disenfranchised UFC fighters or people that are fighting in Bellator and LFA at the time that could just promote their own show and sell out a place and really be like this cultural force that we're seeing? Is that even a possibility in MMA?
I don't really think so. I think that the biggest, for a comparison, I think Pride and Pride fans were kind of the ones who were disillusioned when UFC had bought Pride and said, hey, we're going to have a Pride promotion still, and da-da-da, and then obviously it went away. So I think the answer to that would have been Ryzen, but Ryzen wasn't able to get the fighters that it needed to really promote the thing and the same kind of exposure. And, we've seen it with the MMA Fighting Championship and all these different things, but it's just a different market. And fighters, MMA fighters, their bodies are in different conditions and their names are not the same. They don't have the same. The veterans don't have the same appeal, in my opinion, as some of the veteran wrestlers or like returning fighters sometimes don't have the same impact. And I think this is a purely wrestling thing.
Yeah. As much as people maybe will say negative things towards the UFC, I feel like the UFC brand among hardcore MMA fans is still very, very strong. They don't have as much negative will towards it the way the hardcore wrestling fan has towards WWE. So there's sort of this yearning to support stuff outside of the system. I don't think that exists as much. Plus, there's not this perception that the best fighters aren't in the UFC the way that a lot of hardcore wrestling fans will say that Okada and the Bucks and Omega are the best wrestlers in the world. They're not in the WWE. That really isn't a thing in the UFC. Even if there's a great fighter, maybe like Cyborg was the last one to be in that sort of level where considered the best at her craft, but not into the mainstream or the main company. So I think this would fail badly in MMA is what I think I'm trying to say. Like, there's like this weird wave of Ben Askren fandom that cropped up like 3 months ago where like they want him to fight George St. Pierre and all that. So I could see like that strain of MMA fans starting a thing like this, but I think it would fail because like you said, bodies are different and things are different, and you'd have like Chuck and Tito 3 on it, and it would just be a sad thing instead of this big movement or moment in time.
Yeah. And people still, for, you know, wrestling, for all the stereotypes it has against it, you know, people who are not even casual fans, just spectators, they know who John Cena is, you know, and they know, you know, if you go to a 7-Eleven, they're selling classic wrestlers on lighters, like you'll see Sergeant Slaughter on one, and a person will recognize. They don't know who he is necessarily, but they always, he's that wrestling guy. Like, there are still wrestlers out there, and they don't even have to be that old, you know, like that people know, like Goldberg and everybody else. Like, those are people that are recognizable to the common fan. Whereas in MMA, we don't, besides Tito and Connor, and Ronda, we don't really have that many crossover stars.
I was going to say the two crossover stars are the most high profile thing either one of them did was WrestleMania and a boxing match.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's a good note to end on. I think we were all in with this segment. Now we're all done with this show. Rick, you got anything coming up for the Torch this week?
Yeah, I'd like to get an MMA nerd column written about the upcoming England card, and we'll see if that happens. But otherwise, thanks for listening, guys, and to be continued.
All right, Rick. I look forward to reading that column and checking out the fight this week. I think the buzz for that main event is going to grow a little bit as the week's going on. I think there's some unawareness about it now, and I think it's going to pick up a little bit of steam. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob M. Vallejos. That's RobmVallejos. And, of course, email the show, MMALivecast@gmail.com. Get to us on Twitter at MMA Torch and at MMA Livecast. And support all the Torch brands. Go to MMA Torch, the mothership of our conversations, but also go to PW Podcast, PW Torch Livecast. Get all the other livecasts in. I know Zach Haydorn was on with Rich Fan on his show yesterday. Go to PW Torch, and of course, go VIP so you can relive everything that's happened in wrestling, in modern wrestling history, at least in the past 20 and 30 years, and see what people were saying about it in real time. For Rick, I am Robert, and I'll talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.